Good evening, everyone. My name is Abhijit, and I work for LinkedIn in the Edge Performance and Traffic team. So my talk is about traffic steering using RUM DNS. Let's get started. So this is my team. My team works on public DNS that we use to steer production traffic to our POPs. Then we manage multiple CDNs. And lastly, we manage load balancers and reverse proxy at our POPs and data centers. So let's start with discussing the scale for LinkedIn. We are a 500 million plus community over 200 plus countries, and we do around 2 signups per second. So this talk is about RAM steering, but why do we want RAM steering? Because site speed is important to us, and it's directly associated with the user engagement. So this is the excerpt from one of the popular books, High Performance Browser Networking, and we can see that if a website takes more than 1 second to load, the user will have a context switch, and if it takes more than 10 seconds, the user will probably close the tab and just move on. So lesser user engagement means lesser revenue, and so yeah, revenue is important for everyone. So how do we improve site speed? So this is going to be the agenda for the talk. We're going to start with why we have multiple CDNs and what's our strategy around that. Then we're going to briefly talk about our POP strategy, why we have POPs. Then we're going to discuss, this is the highlight, RAM steering. We'll see how we do that, and we'll also see various case studies which will help us in understanding as to why RAM is the way to go. Then lastly, we'll talk about some tooling around it that makes our lives easy, and some of the tools we're going to open source. So the first agenda is CDN. So some CDN stats, these stats are important because our strategy depends on these. We have cache hit ratio of more than 80%, and we offload around 85% of bandwidth, origin bandwidth. With the help of 5 CDN providers, we have Akamai and Edgecast for global CDNs, and we have our very own LinkedIn CDN. And for China, we have Quantil and ChinaCache. So these are local players because they have stricter business licenses, and local players tend to have better connectivity and peering. So we have multiple CDNs, and having multiple CDNs is always troublesome because these are different companies, these are different black boxes for you, and there are separate portals for them, so you have to manage them separately, and then not all features are available in a portal, so that means a lot of overhead. So why do we want that? Performance, of course. A CDN that performs well in Asia or Europe might not be the CDN that performs well in US or vice versa. So CDNs have different performance in various regions. That's the reason we want to have multiple CDNs and then steer traffic to the best CDN. Next, redundancy. They can have outages. They can have planned events, which we might perceive as risky. So we should have the option to move a CDN out of rotation. Next, capacity. Because we have multiple CDNs, we can handle traffic spikes. So just some graphs. These are all real world graphs. I've removed the CDN names because I don't want to make the performance public. Here we can see that one of the CDN is definitely a slower CDN, and the other two CDNs, the CDN in the brown and blue, are having almost similar performance. This graph is for India, and y-axis is the response time in milliseconds, 50th percentile. The same graph for US region, we can see that there's a clear distinction between performance of these CDNs, and brown is definitely a slower one than the blue one. So we are sure that the CDNs don't perform the same in regions. Let's move on to POPs before we jump into RAM steering. So POPs, we are all aware it's point of presence. It's a way of reducing round trip times between the user and our application servers. So let's take example of a traditional data center. So we have a lot of application servers on the far right, and we have a reverse proxy just before that. And let's assume that between the user and the data center, we have 250 milliseconds latency. So that is something like I'm sitting in India and I'm trying to open a website in United States. Now if we have a server compute time of 500 milliseconds, the time taken for the application servers to process, and including the fire on trips, the time taken to do a HTTPS transaction will be 2,000 milliseconds. So keep this number in mind. This is another way of doing things. We have reverse proxies a little closer to the user, and between the reverse proxy and the application servers, we have a backbone such as MPLS, and we have done some optimizations, like basic stuff, TCP window size increase, so it helps us in overcoming the slow start of TCP, and of course, HTTP keep alives, so that we have TCP connections established between the reverse proxy and the application servers. Now we start calling this service in the middle POP. Now we have 100 milliseconds latency to the POP, let's assume. The servers, application servers are still 250 milliseconds away. And doing the same transaction, we'll have old TCP connections between reverse proxy and application servers. The same compute time, fire on trips, that's a total of 1100 milliseconds. So it's a gain of 900 milliseconds, which is great. So POPs are actually cheaper to build because they are less number of servers, they are just reverse proxies. So we build a lot of POPs. So this is our current footprint for LinkedIn. We have 15 POPs at various locations, and we have gotten a lot faster in building POPs. So we are building new POPs every next month. And these reverse proxies send data to 4 of our data centers currently. And these data centers actually serve regional traffic. So the way we achieve that is we run Hadoop queries, Hadoop jobs, to actually read the user activity and assign a particular user to a data center. And we call that pinning. So once we pin a user to a data center, we basically assign a special cookie to that particular user, and all the POPs around the world, our reverse proxies, they actually read the cookie, and using that cookie, they direct the traffic to the particular data center. So we call this service sticky routing. So let's see how this footprint has helped us in improving performance. So like, for example, India, initially we didn't have Mumbai POP. Once we deployed it, we saw huge improvement of 28%. Similar is the case for other regions. So going back to the agenda, this is the highlight of the presentation, RUM steering. So we do steer traffic using DNS. So this is our DNS setup. If you do a NS query for LinkedIn.com, you will have 8 named servers, 4 for NS1, 4 for Dyn. And all 8 named servers have the same exact configuration, and we have monitoring around it to make sure that they have the exact same DNS records, simple as well as complex. So managing multiple DNS has the same problem as managing multiple CDNs. You have multiple portals to manage, you have to write a lot of automation, you have to have a lot of monitoring. So why do we want that? Why have that? So performance, of course. Let's suppose you have 8 named servers, and they are all performing differently. And so all the recursive DNS servers that you have in your corporate environment or what your ISP provides you, they actually keep track of how LinkedIn Zone is performing for all of these named servers. And whenever queries come to the recursive resolver, it goes to the fastest named server, or at least the faster named server. And the same is the case for availability. So this is the outage from last year, October, where Dyn name servers had DDoS attacks. I'm sure there'll be people in this room who would have faced that outage, at least directly or indirectly. So let's take a look at these graphs. We have 4 name servers colored differently, and the graph on the top is response time, y-axis milliseconds, and then we have availability graph in the bottom. We can see that Dyn. So these are graphs from our synthetic monitoring. We can see that there were 3 DDoS attacks at different times, the middle one being the heaviest one. And there were spikes in DNS performance, as well as the availability. That means these name servers were not able to return any records. And so it was a Friday morning, and so this is what happened, actually. This is the real graph. The left graph is the traffic count graph for LinkedIn. This is a week over week graph. That means the gray graph is for the last week, and the blue one is for the current week. So we can see that there was actually no traffic drop whatsoever, like almost negligible. We can't notice it from the graphs. But at the same time, the graph on the right is the non-zero DNS response times, 90th percentile. We can see that whenever we had the DDoS attack, we had a spike in the 90th percentile, which is expected. So why is that happening? So all the recursive DNS resolvers that are actually trying to resolve records, they are actually noticing that the Dyn servers are actually slowing down. Now, because they are slowing down, all the resolvers are actually adjusting themselves to make sure that they start sending query to NS1 servers. So how do we steer traffic? So one of the basic ways, so this is like the evolution of LinkedIn. Like we initially started with GeoDNS, which is geodirectional DNS, which is as simple as we assign regions and the DNS records to respond to. And the way we decide these DNS records to respond to is we inject JavaScript into LinkedIn's website and do some performance testing by beaconing all our endpoints. And we save all of that data in Hadoop, and then we analyze it, run queries, and we decide, OK, for India, you need to send here, et cetera. So this is how it looks like. Pretty simple. Client tries to open a it does a DNS query. It goes to the local resolver. If it does not have in its query, it goes to the authority name server. But the problem that might happen, some people think, so it's like the authority name server only knows the IP of the local resolver, but not the IP of the client. But actually, that's not the case. There's a thing called eDNS client subnet. It's an extension to DNS, so if you see the dig command, you can see that there's a plus client argument. So basically, it's a way of sending the client's subnet to the authoritative name server. So if I do a query from, say, Ireland subnet, I'll get a London pop. And then if I do the same query from India subnet, you'll get a Mumbai pop. So this is another pie chart for, so you might have this question as to, OK, so we have a thing called eDNS, but how many resolvers around the world actually support that? So this is a graph from the LinkedIn production traffic. And we can see that around 54% of the resolvers around the world actually support eDNS. So from geodirectional DNS, we evolved to using Anycast. And so we did a careful ramp. We started with America. And so Anycast is simple. It's a way of advertising the same IP from different locations. So here's what we saw. There were states which saw improvements. But at the same time, there were some locations where there was a degradation in performance. So it is very expected, because BGP, by design, it's not aware of capacity or performance of the hops. It's only aware of, OK, what's my shortest path to the destination? So least number of hops is not least latency. And that's why we might see degradation in performance. So after discussing the traditional approaches, we moved on to RUM DNS. So this is our current way of steering traffic, where the customer is always right. So there are multiple public DNS providers that offer RUM DNS, some sort of RUM DNS. And we have chosen Sidixis as our DNS provider. So whatever DNS provider you take, RUM DNS provider, it can be broken down into two phases, conceptually. We have a measure phase, and then we have a steer phase. Now, measure phase is about all the clients around the world will actually send measurements. We'll do all the measurements of various endpoints, and they send it to some central location. And then after we have all the measurements, we steer the traffic based on these measurements. So let's break down these two phases. So this is the measurement phase. We have a user who's trying to open LinkedIn.com. Now, using our steering methodology, we go to the nearest POP. The POP sends requests to the data center based on the user, like the pinned data center for that user. And then in response, you get a simple base page with a lot of CSS, JS, HTML. And so we have a special JavaScript, which is rum.js. Now, So let's see what this JavaScript is all about. So this phase is identify phase. So what we do is we create a unique domain FQDN. You can see the domain invite. And once you create that domain FQDN, you actually try to do a GET request for providers.json. Now because this FQDN is actually unique, and only this client is aware of this particular FQDN, it will always be a cache miss at the local resolver. That means the request for DNS actually goes to the authoritative name server. Now, you get a list of providers or platforms to measure. Now, these platforms can be various POPs. It can be various CDNs. Now, we host a special object, which is r20.gif. It's an object which is designed to actually transfer in just one round trip. Now, using navigation timing API, which is available on all the browsers, you get times like time to first byte, what's the DNS connect time, TCP connect time, what's the DNS time, etc. And you aggregate all of that data locally on your browser. And once that data is collected, you report that data back to SIDX's servers. So let's pause here for a second and see what all data has been collected in the measurement phase for RAM. So because we were doing all these requests, we have the client's IP address. And because and by the client's IP address, we have the autonomous system number for the client. And then we have geolocation. Now, just keep a note of this, that geolocation is only for reporting. It is not for doing steering. It's just for reporting. And for aggregation, of course, so when you collect measurements for all these clients, you actually aggregate them over autonomous system numbers, ASNs, and the geography, generally the state of a country. And of course, we have the resolver's IP address. So the way we got that IP address is we had a unique domain for that particular client. And because this will always be a cache miss, the SIDX's server will know, okay, this is the particular resolver which is being used by these clients. So this is how the waterfall looks like. This is the unique domain that was created, and this is the GET request to providers.json. And then once all the beaconing is done, these are the various reports that are sent. So all the global users around the world who are opening linking.com website are actually sending all of this data to our SIDX's servers. And if you don't have Adblock or you don't have Do Not Track enabled on your Chrome, these measurements are being sent. So SIDX's collects all of this data and stores in some kind of big data platform. When I say big data, it just means we have a lot of data and there are a lot of analytics going on. So we are done with the measurement phase. Now SIDX's has all the measurements. Now let's see the steer phase. So user tries to open linking.com. It goes to the local resolver, assuming that it's not in its cache. The query will actually go to the SIDX's name server. Now, we had a lot of data collected, and there was a lot of analysis done. It's almost real time. Now, so let's see what all information is SIDX's aware of. So if our resolver does not support ECS, which we talked about earlier, it's an extension to DNS. So if the SIDX's is not aware of that, then only thing the SIDX's is aware about is the DNS resolver IP address. And so in this particular case, we will actually just look at the DNS resolver IP and then all the aggregate performance behind all its clients, and then it will try to figure out the best answer. Now, if ECS is supported by this resolver, which is supported by 54% of the resolvers as per LinkedIn traffic, the subnet of the client is actually part of the request. And in this particular case, SIDX's can return the right record with very high confidence score. So the DNS response is actually sent back to the resolver, and it is cached at the resolver, which is ultimately sent to the client. So here is how a real-world query looks like. So licdn.com is one of our one of our domains for delivering CDN content, static content. If you do an A record query, it resolves to a CNAME which is owned by Sydexis. Now this FQDN is actually unique to our company because they are our providers. Now this particular FQDN resolves to a CDN. Here it is epsilon CDN, that means edgecast. And note that the TTL for this particular response is 300 seconds. That means if there is a change in performance for this CDN, the changes will be picked fast, really fast, like in less than 5 minutes, because the caches around the world will expire. And then from the CDN CNAME, CDN FQDN, it ultimately resolves to the A record. So I said initially that we handle China separately, like differently. So we have different applications in Sydexis for China and rest of the world. And so this is also another application, and this is for if you want to do the same thing for POPs, you just beacon POPs. If you want to do for CDNs, you beacon CDNs. So let's talk about some benefits of RumDNS. Like this will be like the takeaway as to why you want RumDNS to be implemented. So there are two CDNs having opposite performance throughout the day. You can see that the green CDN is actually faster. In the first half, y-axis is of course the response time in milliseconds. And if you had RumDNS, it will always pick the winning CDN. That means it will always try to return the fastest CDN for that particular region and that particular time. So here is another example. Our on-call was having a good night's sleep, and one of the CDNs, the yellow CDN, decided to have a bad time. So the y-axis here is the number of DNS responses sent per unit time. So this particular yellow CDN actually started having 502 errors while delivering CDN objects. And when this was happening, all the measurements that are being taken by all the clients around the world, they also started seeing 502s. Now, because the measurements are seeing 502s, Sydexis knows that this is not the right CDN to hand out. So the number of DNS decisions for that particular CDN dropped down to almost zero. And at the same time, that same traffic that has been moved from the yellow CDN has to go somewhere, right? So it goes to the red CDN. And all of this happened without waking up the on-call. So it's good. Let's see how RumDNS is better than GeoDNS. So these are different case studies, which we actually saw while we were doing all the careful ramp of our RumDNS. So this is a DNS resolver in US, which belongs to a very large chip manufacturing company. And before we implemented RumDNS with GeoDNS, all the traffic was actually going to North America anycast. And when we enabled Rum, this is what we see. So the traffic goes to North America anycast, but at other hours, we see that the traffic is actually going to Mumbai POP. Now, why is that happening? So we ingest all of the data that we that Sydexis has into ELK, all the decisions that are being made, and after the analysis, we found that so this particular U.S. company has a big India office with 7,000 employees. So what happened is during the U.S. hours, all the measurements that are being taken by all the clients behind that resolver, they prefer anycast, North America anycast. And when the US office actually ends and the India people start working, all the clients for India office, they start preferring Mumbai POP. So Mumbai POP and anycast North America are being handed out at different times of the day. So you can't do that with the normal GeoDNS, otherwise you'll have to make changes to your GeoDNS like every day, which is essentially what RumDNS is about. So let's talk about GeoIP databases. Now, GeoIP databases are not 100% accurate, and if you really want to depend on GeoIP databases, you should actually subscribe to multiple GeoIP databases and then merge all of that data together. And even if you merge multiple databases, even then it is not 100% accurate. So with RumDNS, Because RUM DNS is not dependent on GeoIP at all, it only makes sure, okay, what's the resolver, how is the client performing, what's the right CDN or POP for a subnet, and it hands that out. So yeah, so we saw improvements in India just by enabling RUM. So this is a case study for one of the country, Vietnam. So we were doing partial ramps and we studied how RUM is improving our performance. So we can see that Vietnam has 2C cables and we have 2 POPs, Hong Kong and Singapore. And if we see from the map, both the POPs are actually almost equidistant for Vietnam. And so when we actually deployed all of these POPs, we did some beaconing and we decided that, okay, Hong Kong POP is the right POP to go to for Vietnam. So, but after enabling RUM, we saw that half of the traffic was actually going to Singapore and the rest half was going to Hong Kong. So why is that happening? Because after seeing the logs, the East Vietnam was actually closer to Hong Kong and the West Vietnam was actually closer to Singapore. And because we are RUM DNS actually takes care of ASN performance further divided by regions, provinces or states, it can actually hand out, it can do a more granular decision making, which is not possible via geodirectional DNS, because most of the providers only support states for continents like North America, but not for all the countries around the world. So this is one of the ISPs, VTL. It saw 50% latency improvement. So this is just an example as to how it's improving performance. Now this case study is a little different. In Philippines, the POPs are actually not equidistant. We can see for sure that Sydney POP is a lot farther than Hong Kong POP. And using geodirectional DNS, we were sending traffic to Hong Kong, because at the time of performance measurements, Hong Kong was the faster POP. So this graph is y-axis is the response time. We can see that the red is the GeoDNS, and yellow is the Hong Kong POP. We were sending traffic there. And then after we enabled RUM, the green lines, and it was actually performing as fast as the Sydney POP. So RUM DNS was actually preferring Sydney POP. So some flaws in the implementation. So CDNs, by business, they are a caching company. And to further improve performance, they deploy a lot of POPs around the world to reduce latency between the user and their servers. Now, let's suppose if we have 2 CDNs, and they're performing almost similar for a subnet, ASN. So let's suppose the CDN 1 is 50 milliseconds, and the CDN 2 is 60 milliseconds. So the gap between the performance is just 10 milliseconds. Now, it's possible that these 2 CDNs might start competing with each other because they are so close. So depending on the real world network conditions, it's possible that our RUM DNS responses will actually flip between them. So the way what happens is, because they are flipping, you might have a low cache hit ratio for your objects, because now your requests are distributed between 2 different providers. So the way to fix it is CDN stickiness. That's a way of introducing, to make sure that don't change a CDN if the difference in latency is more than 40 milliseconds, for example. So because now the gap between the 2 CDNs is more, you will not have as much flipping. Next is cache mislatency. Now, I said in my slides that our cache hit ratio is greater than 80%, so generally, as per our experiments, we only measure cache hit objects. So the R20.gif that we were beaconing in the previous slides was actually a cache hit object. But if for your use case, your cache miss latency is a lot different than your cache hit latency, then you can just measure a cache miss object and then use that as a signal for your RUM DNS. Now this one is interesting, POP load shedding. So what happened in our case was we had one of our POPs started running really hot because all the users around that POP were actually preferring this particular POP as the fastest POP. So there was just too much traffic which our POP couldn't handle. Now, so the way to fix that is you can introduce something called latency padding. So it just means what it says. You just pad the latency for that particular POP by, say, 100 milliseconds. Now, because you have padded your POP, all the measurements for that POP by 100 milliseconds, now your POP is synthetically slower. That means you'll start going to the next POP, next closest POP. So we are almost done with the RAM sharing part. Now, ours is a geographically distributed team, and we have just one on call for the whole week, and so we have to be a lot more efficient in our operations. So here are some tools that we have built to make our life easy. So the first one is DNS tool. Now this is a simple tool. This is a single interface to manage multiple DNS providers, because you don't want to go to multiple providers and change configuration on their individual portals. And we have plans to open source this. Currently, it supports Dyn and NS1, but because this is kind of pluggable, you can add multiple providers to it. It of course has auditing and logging, and so the benefit of this is you can add missing features. So one of the providers didn't have the feature of searching records across zones. So this has that, and it of course has the API. So whenever you are bringing a service, a new service at LinkedIn, or deleting us or decommissioning a service, you can use the API. So this one is really important. The reason it's important is because CDNs to us are just black boxes. So we are actually slowly moving towards using third-party providers to having our own CDN, like we have it for the global market, our own LinkedIn CDN, which we have at our POPs. But we still use other CDNs, and those are black boxes to us. So we can't actually monitor these CDNs internally. So this tool is like a black box testing tool for all the CDNs. So what we do is, like, whenever you deploy a change, for example, you just change SSL certificate, then using this tool, you can make sure whether all the configuration is right, whether all the right SSL certificates are being delivered. And then you have things like you can check the caching headers and the right compression headers, etc. So this is purge tool. We know that, like, we might have legal issues, or there are some teams who want to delete some objectionable images, etc. So this is a tool to purge objects across CDNs. And the CDNs actually don't purge objects instantaneously. You actually have to submit a request, and then they take some time. They give you a request ID, and then you have to use that request ID to make sure to check for the status of that purge. So this tool keeps track of all of that. And lastly, so DNS or CDN is an external infrastructure. So we use synthetic monitoring to actually monitor our CDNs and DNS and our LinkedIn website in general. So let's suppose we are going to, if any team at LinkedIn brings up a new service, we write a lot of tests. The tests can be as simple as doing DNS queries, doing a GET request to a particular endpoint, or it can be as complicated as, okay, open LinkedIn.com, go to this particular, click on this particular HTML element. After you have clicked, make sure that you got the right response code, assert HTML, etc. So all of these, so we call it Selenium scripts, and so all of these tests can be run around the world from these nodes. So these are actually owned by Catchpoint. So these tests are actually run continuously from all the nodes around the world, and this data is aggregated, and it is represented in waterfalls, screenshots, scatter plots. So here's the graph for our two CDNs, Akamai and Edgecast. This is a response time graph for the two CDNs, and then you have some aggregation below. This is just the performance chart, but I'm just giving an idea that what this tool is helping us, how this tool is helping us. So Catchpoint is one of the very popular synthetic monitoring providers. It has two ways of pulling data off the provider, like a pull API and a push API. When I say pull, that means Catchpoint aggregates all of this data themselves, and then they give us an API to fetch all of that data, which is a bit slower. So we have built a service called Holden. So all the tests are run from various nodes, various Catchpoint nodes, and when the test finishes, they actually post the results to one of our service, which is Holden. Now this service is responsible for doing all the aggregation, and once all the aggregation and the data is changed as per our requirements, we send it to Active Monitoring Framework, which is our internal service to actually send alerts and graphs. And then we also send it to Kafka. Now we at LinkedIn, we love Kafka. We use Kafka for everything. So this is just a message broker, and any service who wants to utilize this data can actually just subscribe to this topic and do whatever they want. So yeah, as I said earlier, now this is cache. This is a push API. That means we don't have any aggregation delay at the Catchpoint provider side. So which helps us in reducing time to detect issues and ultimately resolve them. So closing thoughts. So there are a lot of regions. Like India is a very important region for us. And we just have one POP there. So yeah, deploy a lot more POPs. That will surely help us in improving site speed. So don't depend on one provider. Careful listeners might have noticed that Sidexis is our only RUM DNS provider. So we are actually working on, we are actually evaluating all the different providers which provide the same features, and we are onboarding them, and we'll soon have multiple RUM DNS providers. The idea is to never have one provider for a feature, because it's possible that they might start performing badly, or they have a bad customer support, or a lot of other reasons. So you should have an option to actually move to a different provider, or at least you should have other providers as an option. Next, regionalize and re-evaluate your vendors. Now this, for example, we looked at CDN performance, and we saw that a CDN does not perform the same across different regions. So for example, if you have a CDN which is fast in China but not in the other regions, so of course, onboard that CDN and use it only for China. And your vendors might change in performance. There are always, they might change the technology or they might have a lot of outages. So always re-evaluate them. The providers that are good today might not be the right providers 1 year later. Clients are your measurement agents. So we saw that in RUM. And so we have our own RUM pipeline, which collects all the RUM measurements, which sends it to a service in our data center, which is sent to Kafka, and then ultimately to Hadoop. And then we have live dashboards to do all the site speed reporting and how our deployments are affecting site speed. So the idea is use your clients to do monitoring and see how your clients are perceiving the website. So don't stop your analysis. That means new CDN providers might be coming up. They might have better technology. So always evaluate new providers in the market. So automate when you onboard. So just last year, we migrated from Ultra DNS to NS1. And so we had all the automation, we had tools to actually, like pluggable tools to actually add NS1 for doing all the DNS records management. So you should always have automation to move to the next provider. Yeah, that's it.